What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Chasing Clarity Health and Fitness Podcast. This is your host, Brandon DeCruz, and today is episode 103, where we're going to discuss the lifestyle factors limiting you from getting lean and how stress, boredom, mindless eating, and sleep loss can increase your appetite, your calorie intake, and your body fat levels. Now, this week's episode is going to be part three in the series on how to reduce your likelihood of overeating and slowing down your physique progress. So if you haven't listened to episodes 101 and 102, which were part one and two of the series, definitely go back and listen to those first, as this episode is a follow-up on how to reduce the likelihood of overeating. So on today's episode, we're going to cover the topics of how stress impacts your eating behaviors and food choices, the topic of emotional eating, which is multifaceted, to say the least, but we're going to discuss why using food as a coping mechanism is, or a coping strategy, isn't an effective one, which many of you probably have realized through trial and error, but I really want to get into more of the mechanisms behind it and also what to do as an alternative strategy. We're going to go through the topic or the concept of mindless eating and how that can increase your likelihood of overeating. We're going to speak about the influence of boredom on eating behaviors, which is actually a fascinating line of literature and of research that a lot of people overlook. So I do want to hit on that, because we could just increase our awareness around how certain emotions or emotional situations can lead us to be in a higher predisposition towards overeating. It can help us put in safeguards into our lives and into our habits and behaviors to avoid doing things that aren't aligned with our goals. And I'm also going to discuss at the end of this podcast the impact that sleep loss has on our eating behaviors and our calorie intake. So last week, I dove into how your food environment influences your dietary decisions, your eating behaviors, and your calorie intake, as what you surround yourself with has a massive impact on what you eat, how much you eat, and what decisions you make on a daily basis, which can ultimately help you make more progress, or it can actually hinder your rate of progress. However, your environment is only one part of the equation when it comes to the lifestyle factors that influence your likelihood to succeed in your physique enhancement journey. One massive component of your lifestyle that can impact your eating behaviors, your calorie intake, your body fat levels, and body composition progress are your stress levels, how you respond to uncomfortable emotions, and then also your sleep quality and sleep quantity. And the reason I want to cover these topics is because, you know, over the last 11 years that I've been coaching, I've had the pleasure to work with well over 1,000 clients, many of whom have been high achievers and extremely successful in multiple areas of their lives. So much of the clients I worked with initially, say during my first 5 to 6 years of coaching, they were physique competitors, including many accomplished male and female physique pros and successful amateurs. So these clients were high achievers in fitness and in transforming their body composition. And then over the last 5 years or so, the vast majority of my clientele have been lifestyle clients and business owners, including many other fitness professionals, such as other coaches. I've had dietitians, gym owners, nutritionists, trainers, things of that sort. And although many view physique competitors and then lifestyle clients almost like they're a different species, what I can say about the vast majority of the clients I've worked with in both of these categories is that they were high performers and high achievers in their given discipline. So I've worked with pros who have been on the Olympia level stage, which is the top level in bodybuilding. And then I've also worked with business executives who have worked in Silicon Valley and very successful in the business world. And although like these two different categories of individuals and clients have had different goals, different body composition starting points, different preferences, and vastly different schedules, you know, the one thing that's a commonality between all of them is that they've all dealt with stress at some point in their lives, and it's often been a very high level of stress. And due to being very driven individuals, these clients have often sacrificed sleep to try to get more done and to reach deadlines, or due to having kids. And this stress and sleep deprivation has impacted many of their decisions, habits, and behaviors, especially when it comes to their eating habits and behaviors. And so it really, there's a massive influence and impact that it has on their food and dietary decisions, which can have downstream impacts on your body composition, your body fat levels, and really your ability to get to your goals in an efficient, effective manner. Now, here's the thing. We don't know what we don't know. So often many of us will sweep our emotions like stress and things like poor sleep under the rug because we'd rather not worry about them. And by no means do I want my clients hyper-focusing on these areas of their life and catastrophizing them. Meaning if they're not in a good place right now, I don't want them to be overly focused and fixated on the stress in their lives or the lack of sleep quality and causing themselves to ruminate on these things. However, I truly aim to empower others through education, and I like to increase my clients' awareness around factors that impact their body composition progress, their training performance, their hunger and appetite levels, their eating behaviors and habits, as without awareness of the impacts that stress, emotions, and sleep loss can have on us, we're less likely to focus on improving these factors. So on today's podcast, I'm going to dive into how these factors within your lifestyle impact different components of your body composition and your behaviors so that you can be more aware of them and can also be inspired to start working on improving these areas of your life so they no longer hinder you moving forward. The first thing I want to discuss is stress as a whole, because every single one of us will experience some form of stress in our lives, whether that be mental or emotional stress or physical stress. And that stress can either be acute, meaning it's short term, or chronic, meaning longer term. However, think back to a time when you've been stressed and overeaten. Has overeaten ever really served you? Meaning, has it completely eliminated your stress or solved your problems? Or was it just a temporary escape? Has overeating gotten you closer or further away from your goals? Has slipping off your diet improved your body composition and health progression, or potentially held it back? And I believe these are all crucial questions to ask yourself. So I encourage you to go back, you know, just hit the rewind and listen back to those questions again and answer them for yourselves. I also think it's important to cover how stress impacts our eating behaviors, our food choices, our food preferences, and calorie intake. Because if everyone realized the drastic effects stress could have on their physique journey and body composition results, I think they'd pay far more attention to it. As I know that personally, as my knowledge on this topic has expanded, I've paid more and more attention to managing my stress and also being aware of the areas in my life that it can affect so that I don't just mindlessly make a nutrition-related decision or even a training-related decision when I'm stressed that I'll regret later on down the road. And overall stress can impact your body composition and your dietary adherence in multiple ways, which can hinder your progress if you allow the stress to go both unaddressed and unmanaged. Because high levels of stress can impact your dietary decisions, your appetite and drive to eat, how likely you are to turn to food to cope with what you're dealing with, your total calorie intake, and even your hunger hormones, which is why it's important to be aware of these downstream effects as you know, of stress, as often people will misattribute their feelings and biofeedback to other factors, when in reality, the root cause of their issues is unmanaged stress. So first, I want to cover how acute stress impacts us from an eating behavior perspective before I get into the data on the effects of chronic stress. So we're going to cover short-term stress first and foremost, then we'll go into longer-term stresses. So research has found that stress can trigger changes in your eating behaviors and dietary decisions, even in the absence of hunger. So I want to make this very clear. This isn't just like a confounding factor from someone dieting and having elevated stress. This can also be in the absence of a deficit, as well as in the absence of true physiological hunger. So a 2009 study investigated the effects of acute and psychological stress on food intake. And to test this, they put participants through a randomized crossover design where each person was put through an acute stress task and a control stress task that did not induce any stress. So in one situation, they were stressed out. In another situation, they had no stress imposed upon them. And in each condition, they made sure participants weren't hungry going into these tasks. So they were in the absence of hunger, they were well fed and well fueled prior to going in. So this wouldn't have exacerbated, or essentially, they weren't dealing with hunger going into the trial, so it wouldn't have been exacerbated just due to the fact that they didn't eat previously. And the results found that calorie intake from sweet foods and their total calorie intake were significantly increased and significantly higher in the stress condition as compared to the control condition, despite these participants not being hungry in either of the conditions. So acute psychological stress is associated with eating in the absence of hunger, especially in individuals with a sensitivity to stress. Then in a 2011 study, researchers assessed the effects of acute psychological stress on food reward and total calorie intake. The results found that when in the stress condition, participants reported a greater wanting for snack foods and desserts and ended up eating a higher amount of calories from both carbs and fats. But notice, there was not an increase in protein, so this did impact their dietary decisions. And they also found that stress-induced food intake in the absence of hunger resulted in an increased total daily calorie intake in these participants. These studies' findings are in line with much of the literature we have on stress and eating behaviors, which find that stress alters food choices, food preferences, and someone's total calorie intake. And much of the research we have looking at the effects of stress and food choices and food preferences find that when individuals are stressed, they are far more likely to make poor dietary decisions and to prefer calorie-dense food sources like hyperpalatable foods which can often derail their diets due to the fact that these are foods which we've covered many times in the past this topic, but hyperpalatable foods are known to drive passive overconsumption, which is an in or unintentional increase in calories and overeating, even when you don't mean to do so. So in a 2009 study, they took women and gave them different puzzles to solve, which ranged in their difficulty. And the high stress condition, they gave them a puzzle that couldn't be solved and then monitored their eating preferences after. And when participants were in the high stress condition, they ate significantly more sweet, high fat, calorie dense food than they ate of the other lower calorie foods and healthier food options that were available to them. However, when they were in the low stress condition, meaning they were given a puzzle that they could solve, these same exact women ate far more low fat, lower calorie foods than high fat foods, which shows that your stress state and your perception of stress can alter your eating behaviors and decisions, essentially from one meal or even one day to the next. So we see that even just an acute stressor can significantly change the food choices we make and the amount of calories we consume. But what about chronic stress, meaning stress that lingers around for a longer period of time? Now, when we look at chronic stress, this is going to have more of a downstream cascade, essentially, because it's a longer duration or a longer time course of exposure to a stressor in your life or in the system. And so chronic stress is something that many individuals are experiencing in today's day and age due to how much pressure we're all under, and also due to the fact that many disregard the importance of using exercise, movement, and a health-promoting dietary pattern to enhance their stress resilience. And instead, many look at food as a coping mechanism where they overeat in response to stress, which can only, it can essentially add to your total allostatic load, which is your total stress ball. So think about it like this. If you're constantly stressed out about work, we're just going to use the example of work because this is something I encounter a lot with clients. So say you're constantly stressed out about work, and every time you receive another email that comes into your inbox or another assignment, you're eliciting a stress response and you're allowing your job to become a chronic stress in your life because this is something you're dealing with the vast majority of the week or on an everyday basis. Now, if you try to use food as a coping mechanism to escape that stress, it may feel good in the moment when you're eating some tasty, hyperpalatable food and distracting yourself from work and essentially the root cause of your stress. But ultimately, this is just a temporary band-aid, as you still have the same problems to deal with once you finish eating. And often, individuals who use these maladaptive coping mechanisms create more stress for themselves by engaging in these overeating behaviors. And this is not only because your original problems are still there once you finish, but you've also made a dietary decision that isn't in alignment with your goals, which causes many to feel guilt, which increases stress in and of itself. And then, if done repeatedly or repetitively, the stress-induced eating behavior will result in a stalling of your progress. And in many cases, the more that you engage in this coping mechanism where you look at food as a coping mechanism, the more calories you're going to take in, the more likelihood you're going to have for higher rates or higher cases of overeating. And in many cases, that's going to cause weight gain, which is not only adding a physical, metabolic, and health stress to your life, but it often results in you feeling extremely frustrated and discouraged about the fact that you're not achieving the physique progress you desire. Now, a national survey found that nearly 50% of people report feeling greater stress now than just 5 years ago, and 43% of those individuals report using food to cope with their stress. The high prevalence of stress-related eating has also been thought to be a contributing factor or a contributing aspect to the increasing prevalence of overweight and obesity in the US. Whereas of the most recent stats, so this was done in 2018, or this was of up to 2018, we see that 73% of adults over the age of 20 are overweight or obese, with 42.5% of US adults having obesity and over 31% of adults being overweight. Experiencing chronic stress and having elevated cortisol levels in response to chronic stress has been shown to increase the desire for calorie-dense items like highly processed, hyperpalatable foods, which are easy to overeat, which is how stress can impact your food choices, your total calorie intake, and can play a role in whether you're able to reach your physique goals or not. And managing stress is especially important when your goal is to drop body fat, as going for hyperpalatable foods when you're stressed is an easy way to erase the deficit you need to maintain to effectively lose body fat. And oftentimes, those who use food as a coping mechanism with stress will eat far more calories than they intend to, which often puts these individuals into a surplus and can lead to weight gain rather than their actual goal, which is weight loss. And when you're experiencing high levels of stress, you're more likely to overeat calories, especially if you have hyperpalatable, tasty foods around you, which is why it's especially important to modify your food environment, especially during a period of high stress. As you're more predisposed to have a desire for and to consume comfort foods like, you know, your cookies, your cakes, your chips, when going through a high stress period. So one way to set yourself up for success and to minimize the likelihood of you engaging in these behaviors that aren't in alignment with your goals is essentially to remove these items from the place that you spend the most amount of time, such as your home or your work environment, which is what we covered in detail in last week's episode, which was episode 102. So if you haven't listened to that episode, definitely go back and check it out as I discussed a bunch of tips and a bunch of useful strategies on how to improve your food environment to make sticking to your diet easier, which is essentially what we want. We want to make consistent actions the easiest to adhere to. And there have been countless studies conducted where they'll put people, you know, put individuals under high levels of stress and monitor their eating behaviors. And they see that during times of high stress, people consume far more calories, especially if they have access to hyperpalatable, processed and/or packaged foods, which are usually high in refined sugars and fats, which is why we want to put ourselves in the best position to succeed with our physique goals and make sure that these types of foods are out of sight and out of mind. So, for example, in a 2012 study, researchers assessed the relationship between chronic and perceived stress levels, drive to eat, and individuals' frequency of food intake, and specifically looked at how likely women who have had reported high levels of stress were to consume healthy, nutritious food sources as compared to palatable, nutrient-devoid food sources. So we're looking at, you know, their likelihood of consuming, you know, nutrient-dense food sources versus hyperpalatable food sources when they're in a state of high stress. And they found that those who had higher levels of reported stress experienced a greater drive to eat, greater feelings of hunger, disinhibited eating, meaning that they had a more difficult time making food decisions that were in line with their goals, and they also had a higher likelihood for binge eating. And those with higher stress levels also tended to have a higher intake of more palatable, non-nutritious foods, yet a lower intake of nutritious foods. So this data suggests that stress exposure may lead to a stronger drive to eat, and maybe one factor promoting excessive weight gain. Research also finds that those who have high stress levels and a high reactivity to stress, meaning that they don't manage stress well, are more likely to choose higher palatability foods, consume more calories in total, and have a higher body fat percentage than those who manage their stress well. So in a 2013 study, researchers investigated the influence of chronic stress and acute stress reactivity on food choice, food intake, and body composition. And in the study, they took women and either exposed them to a stress task or a control task, which was a calming movie. And then in both situations, they examined their HPA axis activity. And after both conditions, they invited the women to a buffet, which contained both low and high calorie snacks. So they had their option to pick whatever they wanted. And they found that women who reported higher chronic stress, both in their daily lives and in response to the stress test, consumed significantly more calories in total and were more likely to go for chocolate cake when given their option of low and high calorie snacks. So this is like a chocolate cake study. We see that it was a significant increase in chocolate cake consumption. And it wasn't just that they ate more calories, but they were driven towards that hyperpalatable, energy dense, tasty food source. And it was in those that not only had higher reported life stress, but also had a higher response to just the stress test that they put them in this acute study. So this is showing both the effects of acute and chronic stress. And they also found that chronic stress was positively related to a person's total fat mass, body fat percentage, and stress-induced negative mood. So the higher the person's stress, the more likely they were to have a higher body fat percentage, a higher total body mass, and then also to have feelings of negative mood states. They also found specifically in women ages 45 and older who had had chronic stress levels consumed significantly less vegetables and reported higher levels of food cravings. So what we see is that when we experience high amounts of stress, it can cause many of us to turn to comfort foods as a form of self-medication, which is why it's important that if you're someone who's dealing with high levels of stress, you look for the root cause of your stress and what aspects of your life or your environment trigger those stressors to arise, rather than simply trying to use comfort foods as an escape, as eating may provide you with a temporary distraction from the stress you're dealing with in the moment, but it's not a solution to actually manage and rid yourself of that stress. And all it does is set you back further away from your goals, which can induce more stress and frustration in and of itself. Because a lot of times, many people that I interact with and I do consultations or I work with, especially in the initial stages of our time working together, they're extremely stressed by the fact that they're not making the progress that they expect that they desire, that they want, or that those around them are making. And it's not that we are to compare ourselves to those in our circle or those, you know, that we see in the same gym or whatever it may be. But oftentimes it's that they are using food as a coping mechanism. And these are behaviors that aren't serving them. So we need to rectify the issues at hand and look for better interventions and strategies to make sure that the bottlenecks or issues that have held back their progress in the past don't do so moving forward. The next topic I want to cover is emotional eating and using food as an escape from your emotions and why that isn't an effective strategy. So emotional eating is defined as eating in response to negative emotions and can be perceived as an escape from experiencing negative emotions. However, this is what's referred to as an avoidance-based coping strategy. So this is not what we want. We don't want avoidance-oriented decision-making. And a lot of people have developed this maladaptive behavior where they use food as a coping mechanism. And this often results in emotional eating, where you try to distract yourself from the uncomfortable feelings and emotions you're experiencing, such as sadness, anxiety, overwhelm. It could be anger, frustration, loneliness, or even boredom. And the thing is, eating is not an effective strategy to solve your problems and often just makes you feel worse as your problems are still there after you finish eating. However, veering off plan, eating a bunch of food that isn't aligned with your goals often makes you feel worse after finishing than when you even started. And this is something I can relate to. You know, there have been times in my life where I've been extremely frustrated or extremely anxious or overwhelmed or going through high stress periods of my life. And I've turned to food. And especially years ago, probably over a decade ago, this was something I struggled with personally, but it didn't alleviate my problems. And it wasn't until I started really focusing on stress management, I sought out the help of a counselor and a therapist and really worked through my issues that I was able to find the root causes of what I was experiencing and stop turning to food. And it really, honestly, it has bettered my relationship with food astronomically. And it's helped me help other clients do the same. And now, the main issue with emotional eating is that although you may feel better about the situation you're dealing with in the moment while you're eating a ton of super tasty, hyperpalatable, dopamine-spiking foods, this is only a temporary band-aid. And once that meal is over and those foods are done, the emotions and stress you're experiencing are still there and they need to be dealt with. So emotional eating also often causes a negative feedback loop where the consumption of these foods initially help you feel better until the meal or the foods are done, and then you feel even worse as a result of overeating. And there's quite a bit of research that finds that different emotions will significantly impact food intake. And many of these studies will have, you know, people watch a sad movie clip or scene, and then will measure how much food they eat in response. And they find that when they make subjects feel sad or stressed, they eat significantly more than when they're shown something positive, like a positive movie reel, or something that's funny, like a comedic routine or something of that sort. And we see that when people are sad, they eat far more than when they're happy and they're given something that has a positive stimulus. So for example, in a 2018 study, they took normal weight and overweight women between the ages of 25 to 42 and had them watch either a video of regular daily activities that elicited what was referred to as a neutral response. So there was no emotional response to it, essentially, or a video with scenes featuring common problems we encounter in life, which were used to evoke negative emotions. And the participants were then offered a brunch containing sweet, salty, and healthy food items to evaluate their intake and food choice after being exposed to these different types of videos. And they found that exposure to negative emotions induced by watching the problem video increased calorie intake in both normal weight and overweight women. But between the two groups, their food selection choices differed a bit. So the normal weight women increased their consumption of calories only from sweet food, whereas the overweight women significantly increased their intake of both sweet and salty foods. And these results show that even just the thought of common problems of life can trigger greater calorie consumption in the presence of high calorie foods. And this led the authors to conclude that this study should serve as a warning. This is exactly from their, you know, from their conclusion. This study should serve as a warning for the risks of exposure or excess exposure to high sugar and or high fat food as everyday problems, which will not cease to exist. So essentially, this is not a good coping strategy, first and foremost, but also you should not surround yourself within your environment with these high calorie, high sugar, high fat foods if you're dealing with excess stress, which a lot of people are. And it's not something that's just going to go away. Another study looked at how emotional eating impacted people's food choices, calorie intake, and BMI. So to examine this, they took a group of over 3,000 men and women ranging from the ages of 25 to 64. And they found that emotional eating and depressive symptoms correlated positively with one another. And both were related to a higher body mass, So those who turned to food when experiencing emotions had greater body fat levels. Emotional eating was also related to a higher consumption of sweet food in both genders and non-sweet foods in men. Now, many of you out there can probably think of a time where you were dealing with an uncomfortable feeling or emotion, whether that be sadness, stress, heartbreak, anxiety, or overwhelm. And you turned to food to distract yourself from the uncomfortable situation you were in and as a way to comfort yourself. And although eating can help distract you from your emotional state in the moment, it's only a temporary band-aid, not a solution to your problems. And the issue with using food as a coping strategy is it often makes us feel worse after than we did prior, due to the fact that the emotion we were dealing with prior to eating a ton of food is still there and it still hasn't been resolved. Emotional eating also involves overeating calorie-dense food sources, which can set back our progress in our physique and health-related pursuits. And often you feel worse after, like after doing this and engaging in these behaviors, due to the guilt and the regret you can experience after going off track from a nutritional perspective. Emotional eating behaviors and looking to food for comfort are often learned behaviors that many of us have been doing since we were children. Think about like when you fell off your bike and hurt yourself as a kid, your parents may have given you a lollipop or something sweet to pacify you. When you were in high school and you went through your first breakup, you may have sat down on a Friday night watching movies and eating a pint of Ben and Jerry's. And I also know many women who turn to chocolate to make them feel better when they're experiencing premenstrual syndrome symptoms. And they often say they learned this from their mother or the other influential women in their lives. And these are all examples of habits many of us engaged in growing up, but these aren't habits that serve us long term going forward. Now that we're adults who are fully capable of making our own decisions and replacing habits that aren't conducive for our forward progression and our development as a whole. So this is where we need to look towards making, more conducive coping strategies that don't have a negative impact on our health and our fitness, such as going for a walk or getting out of an environment where you're constantly being exposed to food cues. This could be spending time in nature, picking up a meditation practice, such as doing a guided meditation that you can find freely available on YouTube, calling a loved one, whether that be your partner, a friend, or a family member, listening to some uplifting music that improves your moods and lifts your spirits, turning on a podcast or an audiobook, and doing some type of mindfulness activity, meaning that you're really staying engaged with a certain topic and allowing that to really fill up your cup. Or it could be journaling your thoughts and feelings. And the key in replacing food as a coping mechanism with another activity or practice is that you should feel better after engaging in it, and you should feel relief, not guilt, which is often happens when you use food as a coping strategy. In order to mitigate issues with emotional eating, you need to try to find the root cause of the problem and what emotions and situations leave you most predisposed towards overeating. And once you've identified what is causing you to eat in order to cope with those emotions, you need to work on changing your response and reaction to these emotions and try to replace this impulsive eating response with a more productive and positive constructive action that will actually help you deal with this emotion-inducing situation. And this action can be as simple as going for a walk and removing yourself from the current situation and just clearing your head whenever you feel the impulse to emotionally eat. I'll tell you, that's something I utilized personally when I was dealing with this years ago, is that if I knew that I was in an environment such as my house, or if I was in, a nearby environment where I was exposed to a lot of food, what I would do is I would simply put on my running shoes, I'd walk out the door, and I'd go for a walk in nature, or I would drive to a park and go out into an environment where I wasn't exposed to food first and foremost, but I was allowed to clear my head. I'd leave my phone in the car, and I would just allow myself some time by myself to really de-stress, decompress, and really think through what I want to do going forward. And it always, essentially what it did was it put a pause between an impulsive activity like just turning to food, and it allowed me to get myself into a more rational state of mind where I realized that eating was not a conducive coping mechanism, but it also wasn't something that was in alignment with the physique and the health related goals that I had for myself. And so, another option is you can use a positive environment and outlet like the gym, a meditation practice, a journaling habit for your stress. And although energy balance is the key fundamental principle that underlies nutrition and improving your body composition, self-awareness around your emotions and your eating behaviors is something more people need to pay attention to in order to help avoid and mitigate issues that will derail their ability to adhere to their plan and get the results they desire. So next, I want to cover how mindless eating drives up our calorie intake and impacts our eating behaviors. And one thing that every single one of us has in common, regardless of our specific goals, our background, our sex, our current body composition, and our body weight, is that we all eat and engage in eating-related behaviors daily. And one of the reasons I've covered so many aspects of nutrition and diet, and especially topics related to those on the past 100 plus episodes of this podcast, is because regardless of what phase of life you're in, you're going to need to make food decisions on a regular basis. And one of the main reasons why so many struggle with improving their body composition and attaining the lean physique they desire is due to their diet, and often the root causes of their dietary issues is due to how they go about making their food decisions. The vast majority of individuals are guilty of what's called mindless eating. And mindless eating refers to when our eating behaviors are influenced by unconscious factors which influence what we eat and how much of it we eat. So mindless eating also involves making unconscious decisions which can have substantial effects and impacts on our diet, our body weight, our body composition, and our health. Mindless eating also involves eating habits and behaviors that are literally in direct opposition to mindful eating. And unlike mindless eating, mindful eating has been shown to help with calorie control and dietary success. So unlike mindless eating, mindful eating involves eating behaviors such as eating slowly, eating without distraction, differentiating and distinguishing between actual true physiological hunger cues as compared to forms of psychological hunger like cravings, snacking, and hedonic eating. And also it really promotes the idea of paying attention to your food while eating it. Be in the moment, be where your feet are, really take in the sights, the smells. Slow down your rate of eating. So put your fork down in between bites, chew thoroughly, and make sure that you're receiving those satiety signals. Eat in a slow manner where your brain can actually get the impulses or the signals from the stomach that you're actually feeling satiated, or you're actually eating enough and feeling satiated. So when you eat while you're being distracted, such as while you're watching TV, or you eat something out of habit rather than hunger, such as overeating popcorn at the movies, or when you take bites, licks, and tastes across the day, whether that be of your partner's or your kids' foods, these are all examples of mindless eating behaviors. It's important to realize that the purpose of eating is to provide our bodies with energy and fuel, to get the macro and the micronutrients our bodies need, and to suppress physiological hunger. However, engaging in mindless eating behaviors often causes us to overconsume calories and override our natural satiety signals. And research done on mindless eating finds that mindless eating can significantly increase your calorie intake. And this is because eating in a distracted manner increases your likelihood of overconsuming foods and also decreases your awareness of both the food quality and the food quantity of which you're eating. Now, a lot of research on mindless eating has been done looking at the impact of watching TV or using technology during meals, and finds that eating a meal while watching TV or using your phone or your computer can substantially increase the amount of calories you eat at that meal and also at other meals throughout the day. So for example, in a 2006 study, researchers investigated how many calories from a meal individuals would eat while watching a TV program as compared to not watching TV while eating the exact same meal. And so they tested this with different meal sessions and found that when participants watched TV during a meal of pizza, they increased their calorie intake of pizza by 36%. And when they watched TV while eating a meal of mac and cheese, they increased their calorie intake by a whopping 71%. You know, their findings support other data we have that finds that watching TV increases the amount of high density or high calorie density palatable foods eaten and may contribute or constitute one vector contributing to the current obesity crisis. Another 2006 study found that eating in front of the TV increased total calorie intake by 14% relative to a person's baseline intake, which shows how food intake can be increased when attention to food and self-monitoring are impaired when distracted during meals. Then in a 2019 study, they looked at how smartphone use during meals impacts calorie intake and found that when participants ate a meal while using their phone, it increased their calorie intake by approximately 15%. And the issue with mindless eating is that when you eat in a distracted manner, you not only passively increase your calorie intake, but you also enjoy your meal less and receive less satiety from it, which makes it more likely that you'll overeat at other meals throughout the day because you're going into each meal with less satiety and more hunger. Next, I want to cover how boredom influences eating behaviors, as boredom is often a trigger for snacking and for overeating. And another emotion that can prompt us to eat is being bored. And there's actually a few theories as to why this occurs. One being that individuals will eat when bored to stimulate themselves, to have some type of stimulus and essentially entertain themselves. And the other theory being that people will try to eat to escape the feeling of being bored. And the effect of boredom has been looked at in terms of eating behaviors, and it's been shown to be a direct influencer of what and how much we eat. Because when we are bored, we will often look for a distraction or an escape from that boredom. And many people use food and eating as that escape. So boredom often leads to a situation where we're seeking out entertainment and reward. And this is why being bored can lead to eating, even without the need for it, as eating and snacking provide an increase in dopamine, which provides us with that reward response and that sensation of pleasure. And the issue with allowing boredom to influence our eating behaviors is that the foods that deliver the largest reward are hyperpalatable foods, which also tend to be extremely calorie dense and the most likely to encourage overeating, which can easily throw off our ability to moderate and control your calorie intake, and thus blow out your calorie budget for the day and or week, which can derail your ability to get to your body composition related goals. On the other hand, you'll often notice that you'll be less likely to snack or eat in excess when you're busy and you're engaged in activities that require your attention, which is due to the fact that your focus is diverted elsewhere and you're literally experiencing the opposite feeling of boredom. You're entertained, you're in your flow state, you know, you're in a place of deep concentration. And this is why you'll notice that when you get into a flow state, doing an activity you truly enjoy, whether that be training, reading, doing cardio, or if you're doing something you love, like coaching clients on the gym floor, you can go hours without thinking about food. And this is something I see in both my own life. I've also seen it with many of my own clients where they're so engaged in what they're doing. So they're training clients on the gym floor and it's like, I didn't even have time to eat, or I didn't even think about food. And so boredom has been found to significantly increase our calorie intake and our likelihood to engage in snacking. In a 2015 study, they tested the effects of boredom on chocolate consumption. And to test this, they had participants watch a 60-minute film in one condition, and the other condition, they played the same clip over and over again for 60 minutes to induce a state of boredom. And in both conditions, they placed a candy dispenser with chocolate M&Ms and measured how much chocolate these individuals ate on average. And they found that participants ate an average of double the amount of M&Ms, so double the amount of calories, when they were in the boredom condition, which shows the impact that boredom can have on our, not only our food choices, but our total consumption and total calorie intake. So if you're someone who finds themselves reaching for food when you're bored or you don't have something to do, I suggest you pause and instead of impulsively reaching for that bag of chips or cookies or whatever snacks you generally go to when being bored, do the following. First, keep yourself busy. One of the best ways to avoid mindless eating or eating when bored or overeating in general is to remain busy and keep your mind occupied. And I found over the years that the clients of mine who have been the least likely to suffer from eating offline and snacking excessively due to boredom are always those who keep themselves busy with either work, with their families, or with their hobbies and their passions. Second, have a backup plan when bored to keep you entertained or distracted without it involving food. So this can be things like going for a walk, reading a book, listening to a podcast, or calling a loved one. These are all activities that can have positive impacts on your health, your behaviors, especially your mental health, that don't involve eating and turning to food as a way to escape that boredom. And the third thing is keep hyperpalatable snacks out of your environment, because keeping these foods out of your house and eating environment will keep them both, you know, out of sight and out of mind and make you less likely to turn these items to fill the gap when you're bored. Now, the last lifestyle factor that limits many from getting lean is their sleep quantity and sleep quality. So poor sleep quality, or poor quality sleep in general, is often a driver behind why many struggle with increases in hunger, in appetite, and a heightened drive to eat, and have trouble sticking to their nutrition plan. Getting insufficient quantity and quality sleep can skew your hunger and satiety hormones in a negative direction, can increase your hunger, your appetite, and your drive to eat, can also decrease your satiety. And many tend to make poor food decisions or food-related decisions, both in terms of their total calorie intake and their food quality and their food source selection after getting poor quality sleep, as compared to when they have their sleep dialed in and they're getting great quality sleep. And getting adequate sleep is extremely important when it comes to managing your hunger and satiety levels and hitting the nutritional targets needed to get to your body composition goal. However, getting poor sleep can skew your satiety and hunger hormones and impact your eating behaviors and total calorie intake as a result of this increase in your hunger hormones. So your sleep has a major impact on the two main hormones involved in hunger management and appetite regulation, which are leptin and ghrelin. Now, leptin is a satiety hormone, and it's also an energy expenditure hormone. And so leptin is secreted by fat cells, which influence how satiated you feel, your activity levels, how many calories you burn per day, and it signals to your brain your level of energy availability. So it lets your brain know, do we have sufficient energy on board? And it's well known that our leptin levels go down during a fat loss phase, as a loss in body fat means that we have less of an ability to produce leptin, since leptin is secreted and produced by fat cells. So the less fat cells we have, or the smaller the fat cells we have, the less leptin is produced. But another way that many overlook that another way that we can lower leptin levels, or that leptin levels get significantly lower, is through sleep loss. So even if you're eating at maintenance or even in a calorie surplus and have more than enough calories coming in, your leptin levels can lower significantly due to a lack of sufficient sleep, which will cause you to experience less satiety and higher levels of hunger despite eating more than enough food. Now, sleep also impacts the opposite end of the equation. So it impacts our hunger hormone, and our main hunger hormone being ghrelin. So ghrelin is the primary hunger hormone, which acts as what's referred to as a meal initiator hormone, meaning that it goes up prior to our regular meal times, which is why you'll generally notice that you feel hungry around the same times each day and prior to your regular meal times. And this is also why if someone is excessively snacking and they integrate this as a daily habit within their routine, you'll notice if you are that individual that you have snacking behaviors that aren't serving you, you'll notice that you might eat, you know, four meals per day, and you might eat at 9, 12, 3, and 6. But every single day you have an afternoon snack at 1:30, and you're just going to the vending machine or whatever it may be. You'll notice that despite the fact that your meals are at 12 and at 3, and you usually get hungry prior to 12 and prior to 3, you're also getting hungry around 1:30. And that's because you've entrained your circadian rhythm and also the release of ghrelin to anticipate a feeding at that time. So you've essentially taken yourself from 4 calorie controlled meals to 5 eating occasions per day, and your hunger hormones are going to get entrained along that pattern in that schedule. So what we see is when you don't sleep enough, leptin levels drop and ghrelin levels increase, which make for a situation where you feel substantially hungrier, you're more susceptible to experiencing cravings, and you have a lower likelihood of being physically active and expending calories or burning calories, which can easily cause, this is a situation that can easily cause you to slip up off your diet and eat more as well as move less, putting yourself into a situation where you can easily undo the energy deficit you're trying to maintain to lose body fat, and can lead to being in a surplus where you're gaining weight rather than losing or maintaining it, which is often people's goal. Insufficient sleep can also impact your appetite in many ways and can have downstream effects on your drive to eat, your calorie intake, and ultimately your ability to adhere to a calorie deficit or even just a calorie target in general. So in a 2004 study, researchers found that after only 2 nights of short sleep, young, healthy, normal weight males experienced an 18% decrease in leptin and a 28% increase in ghrelin. Now, this 18% decrease in leptin from just 2 nights of sleep loss may not sound like a lot for many of you out there, especially those that aren't like very familiar with satiety and hunger hormones and how they're impacted by other factors like dieting and sleep. But when we actually compare this to the precipitous decreases we see in leptin levels from fat loss, we see that this decrease in leptin from just 2 nights of sleep loss is very similar to the decrease we see in dieting conditions, as researchers have found that being in a 900 calorie deficit, which is a pretty significant deficit, drops leptin levels by 22%. So basically, sleep loss over just 2 days can cause a decrease in our main satiety hormone similar to that of an aggressive fat loss phase, where you've reduced your calorie intake by 900 calories under maintenance. So that would be like going from eating 2000 calories during a maintenance phase right down to 1100 calories per day in week 1 of your diet, which is an aggressive calorie reduction, an aggressive move in general. But this is the same impact that it could have in terms of 2 nights of sleep loss is very similar to a 900 calorie severe deficit. In this study, they also looked at these individuals' hunger and appetite levels and found a 24% increase in hunger, a 23% increase in appetite, a 33 to 45% increase in their desire for calorie-dense high-carb foods, which shows that sleep loss isn't just leading to a skewing of your hunger and satiety hormones, but it can also potentially impact your desire to eat, your eating behaviors, the cravings you experience, and what types you're driven to eat, or what types of foods you're driven to eat. Now, the issue with how sleep loss impacts your hunger and satiety hormones is that it usually results in you eating more than intended to, due to feeling a significant increase in hunger and a significant decrease in satiety. So poor sleep can have profound effects and profound impacts on our appetite regulation, our calorie intake, our decision-making abilities, and ultimately our body fat and body composition levels and outcomes. And as a result of these downstream impacts sleep loss has on our ability to manage hunger and regulate our appetite, it's been associated with increased calorie intake and the gain of body fat. So we have many well-controlled studies that find that when individuals are sleep deprived, they end up consuming substantially more calories in a day after getting a poor night of sleep as compared to when they had an adequate night of sleep. So it drastically impacts their dietary decisions and their total calorie intake. So for example, in a 2010 study, researchers found that when people were sleep deprived, they ate an average of 560 more calories per day than when they got sufficient sleep. And this effect was seen again in a more recent study from 2020, where researchers examine the negative impact sleep loss can have on our ability to adhere to our diet and our subsequent calorie and macronutrient intakes after a night of poor sleep. So in this study, they compared how participants ate after their normal levels of sleep. So they had them in a condition where they got their normal night of sleep. And then they compared that with how their eating behaviors changed after five nights of poor sleep. And the results found that when individuals were sleep restricted, they increased their daily calorie intake by an average of 527 calories per day. And they also saw that they decreased their protein intake while increasing their fat and carb intake, which shows that sleep loss not only increases the amount of calories we need to eat to feel satiated, but it also impacts and influences our food choices. And both of these studies find that when individuals get poor sleep, they increase their calorie intakes by well over 500 calories, which is enough to undo most dieters' deficits, which can either result in a fat loss plateau or even potential body fat gain if you're inadvertently going into surplus due to continually getting poor sleep. And sleep is something many overlook. However, it is something that can help or hinder your physique transformation journey. And this isn't just something that we see in research. I know that I've personally had periods and seasons in my life where I've struggled to get sufficient sleep, and I've personally felt the increase in hunger and higher drive to eat. And knowing the impact sleep can have on hunger and satiety levels has allowed me to be more aware of the sleep and hunger connection. And to know that feeling this way is a normal response to poor sleep, which has reinforced why I prioritize sleep so heavily and keep a consistent sleep routine year round that I stick to each and every night. As I've had dieting phases in the past where I've gotten poor sleep throughout the majority of the phase. And then I've also had other dieting phases where I've really prioritized my sleep quality and quantity, and the phases where I didn't make sleep a priority were much more challenging and difficult, especially from a hunger and appetite standpoint, which has made a process like fat loss, which is already challenging, even more difficult than it needed to be. So I know this from personal experience, but I've also seen this impact many others that I've worked with. And the impact poor sleep can have on hunger, satiety, and appetite is something I also have seen with many of the clients that I've worked with, as there are some weeks where nothing has changed in their nutrition training plans, meaning they're at the same calorie intake. A lot of them are, you know, in a building phase or in a surplus, so they're insufficient energy availability. They are not dealing with hunger and appetite issues. However, they report having significantly higher feelings of hunger and appetite and say that they're experiencing more cravings. Now, seeing as I track sleep with my clients, I often see trends where clients will report feeling greater hunger levels and less satiety during a week where they've gotten poor sleep, which is why I think focusing on sleep is such a beneficial and necessary part of the physique transformation process. However, by getting adequate sleep quantity and quality, we put ourselves in the better situation to manage hunger and satiety and ensure that we're in the best position to succeed with our diets and our physique transformation journey. So, all right, guys, that is it for this week's podcast and part three on our How to Reduce the Likelihood of Overeating series. As always, thank you for listening to another episode of the Chasing Clarity podcast. If you need anything from me, whether that be one-on-one coaching or Zoom consultations, please reach out to me through my email, which is bdecruzfitness@gmail.com, or you can find me on Instagram, which is @BrandonDeCruz_. Also, please do me a favor and remember to follow the show, whether that be on iTunes or Spotify, leave us a review, and also be sure to share this episode on your stories. Really, the goal with this podcast is to have a positive ripple effect on as many people as possible so that those out there that listen to my content and listen to the information that I provide in these weekly podcasts can look better, they can feel better, and they can function better. And I hope that I've been able to have that type of a positive impact on you as a listener, but you're also able to share that the value that you've gotten from this podcast with others in your life who you wish to have a better state of body composition, health, and also just live a life of abundance. As always, guys, thank you for listening. Have yourselves a great weekend.